Good afternoon. I'm John Hirsch from the International Peace Institute, and I'm together with Mr. Richard Dicker, who is the director of the International Justice Program at Human Rights Watch, and we are discussing the International Criminal Court and Africa. So, Richard, last year the African Union called for the deferral of cases against the presidents of Sudan and Kenya by the ICC and encouraged African member states to speak with one voice against the prosecution of serving Africans' heads of state by the ICC. There was even some discussion of possible withdrawals from the ICC by African member states, none of which have happened. Where do matters now stand?
Well, an important question with a complex answer. There was, at the initiation of the African Union, a vote held at the UN Security Council on November 15th, 2013, brought by Rwanda, a elected member of the council, to have the cases against, as your question suggested, Kenya's president and deputy president suspended. That resolution, interestingly enough, which did not even have the support of 9 Security Council members, was clearly headed to rejection beforehand. Rwanda insisted on bringing it to a vote in an effort to try to increase the political price paid by the majority of states who ultimately voted against it. The next step in the ongoing contention occurred at the ICC's Assembly of States Parties, which was held in The Hague in end of November, just 10 days after the Security Council vote. And at that session, there was first a plenary discussion that resulted from a request by the African Union for debate or conversation over its and some African members' concerns about the International Criminal Court. That was an unprecedented development. I think the upshot of that discussion was quite positive, and it gave everyone a chance to air their views. The other upshot from that meeting of the assembly was the amendments to the rules of procedure and evidence that allowed greater flexibility for accused not to be present for the entire duration of their trial. I think the decision-making authority remains in the hands of the judges whether to grant a request for leave from day-in, day-out attendance, and that's a positive thing. The unfortunate upshot was the language that created this possibility could be interpreted to create 2 tiers of justice, one for senior officials and one for everyone else. But ultimately, again, it's up to the judges. As to withdrawal, significantly, no states have withdrawn from the ICC. I think that was a bit of bluff intended to send fear into the hearts of other state parties that Africans would leave the court.
Some reports suggest that the meeting of the Assembly of States Parties of the Rome Statute last December also discussed whether formally or informally the idea that the next president of the Assembly will be an African. First of all, is that accurate? And secondly, how significant is that likely to be?
To those 2 questions. First, there is a rotation among regions that make the initial choice as to selecting the president. This year, Corps for the next 3 years, it was the turn of the African group of state parties. So it wasn't a decision taken at the assembly itself. It followed a regular procedure. Second, in terms of the significance, I think it's a great thing, or could be a very positive thing. And there are, interestingly, three very qualified candidates. We'll see how whoever is elected handles what is a complex, challenging mandate. I'm optimistic that it could be a good thing for the Assembly of State Parties, for the court, and for the court's relationship with Africa.
The International Criminal Court is an international legal institution, whereas the African Union is a continental political organization. So they're very different from each other. Given this recent set of discussions, what steps or initiatives do you think that either the ICC or the African Union can take to overcome the recent discord and also to strengthen jurisprudence on the African continent?
Well, I think there are a few steps that could be taken by African states parties, some of whom have criticized the court for the fact that all of its investigations and cases emanate out of Africa. And very specifically, I think African state parties, whether it's in regard to Syria, whether it's in regard to North Korea, whether it's in regard to Sri Lanka, could help to broaden the court's docket. I think that would be very helpful. I think also African state parties that are committed to the fight against impunity could help dial down some of the negativity that a few, I'm thinking Sudan, I'm thinking more recently the government of Kenya, have ratcheted up, directed against the court for their own reasons or rationales of their various heads of state. I think that could take the form of allowing the court, as it's requested, to open a liaison office in Addis Ababa on the site of the African Union. And lastly, I think the court could up its game in communicating in Africa, both with governments and civil society, what the limits of its mandate are, what it can and cannot do.
Finally, massive human rights violations, ethnic killings, and large-scale displacements of populations, as you know, are taking place in South Sudan and the Central African Republic. In both cases, these crimes are being carried out with impunity. What are the recommendations that you have or the Human Rights Watch has for some immediate effective action to stop the violence, and secondly, to assure accountability?
I think there are two different issues embedded in that question. The first, as you suggested, immediate action to stop the violence. I think one step would be maximum political pressure on those responsible at the top in both country situations to halt the abusive, if not egregious, practices their own forces are engaging in. I think the bolstering of the United Nations peacekeeping role and encompassing protection of civilians as a key part of that peacekeeping role is absolutely essential for Central African Republic. I think the deployment of a UN peacekeeping mission, which will rehat the African Union force on the ground, some of whose contingents have been doing an admirable job trying to protect civilians at risk. I think those two steps are necessary in terms of ending or greatly limiting violence day to day. In terms of the second prong of the question, ensuring accountability, I think, one, in regard to CAR, we would encourage the prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, who has jurisdiction over CAR because it is a state party to the ICC treaty, to open a second investigation. She already has one ongoing in CAR. We think, given the events since March of last year, the alleged crimes amount to rationale for opening a second investigation. We think more will be needed domestically in creating specialized units, prosecutorial units and judicial units in Bangui that could look into, on a domestic level, the most serious crimes. In South Sudan, we are awaiting the report from the African Union-initiated Commission of Inquiry to see what findings they have. We have asked for an investigation, I believe it's happened, into breaches of security with a toll on civilians who were seeking refuge in UN compounds in South Sudan, and that investigation would be supplemental pending the results of the AU Commission of Inquiry. And then we would expect recommendations from the AU that would call for accountability for those responsible for the most serious crimes. I think the ultimate judicial mechanism to be utilized in this situation has got to be thought through a bit more carefully. And of course, South Sudan, unlike CAR, is not a state party to the ICC treaty and would require, were the ICC to be designated with the judicial mandate there, would require a Security Council referral.
Thank you very much for these insights and your analysis. Thank you very much.